What is up, everyone? Welcome back to our little podcast here at Fandango. My name is Eric Davis, and joining me, as always, is Sean O'Connell. What's up, Sean?
Hey, Eric, this is a huge, huge weekend. And I mean, the summer is shaping up to, especially June, which I think we'll talk about next week. June has so many major titles, but Memorial Day really is, I'd even argue more so than the July 4th weekend. This is the biggest blockbuster weekend of the summer.
This is. I mean, this is, when you look at Memorial Day weekend, you look at, the films of the past, the Indiana Jones movies, I think a couple of them, Star Wars movies have been Memorial Day weekend. Pirates of the Caribbean, I think, did maybe one or two on Memorial Day weekend. I mean, these are like, you know, and Disney loves Memorial Day weekend. But it's who's not in Memorial Day weekend this year, I may add, which is interesting. But I could see them coming back maybe now with the Star Wars movies. But yeah, this is, I think, this July 4th and maybe that first weekend of May, I think, are the three biggest weekends of the summer. Warner Brothers, when they had that Dark Knight spot towards the end of July, I think, the Harry Potter spot, trying to make that a big weekend too. But I think Memorial Day, first weekend of May, July 4th. And so this is a huge weekend and some big movies coming out. You saw Fast and Furious 6. I did not. I saw Hangover 3. You did not. So we're going to kind of ask each other some questions about that, right?
Yeah, let's start with The Hangover 3, which is the conclusion to this trilogy, which I don't think anybody thought was going to be a trilogy until the first one landed with such force and earned, you know, huge money. And I was even surprised going back and looking to see how much The Hangover Part 2 made. I mean, I thought it did okay, but I didn't realize that it made over $250 million and came close to $300 million. So obviously Part 3 was inevitable. But my question is to you, now that you've seen it, and I mean, this isn't spoilery at all, but is this closure, or is this still sort of, do they still sort of think that this could be a franchise, that if these guys do decide that they want to do another one, that they could?
You know, I think it can go both ways. The film is definitely closure. It definitely wraps up the three, you know, and it's a really different Hangover movie than the first two, which I was actually pleasantly surprised to see. This one does not begin with the basis of them waking up from some crazy night and then having to go and figure out what happened. I mean, that's the premise of both the first one and the second one. This one does not do that. This one kind of is darker. It's a little bit grittier. It's a little emotional. And I'll be honest, it's not like, it's not laugh out loud funny. It's more of like, I've said, it's more of like an action heist flick than it is an all out comedy. And I sort of like that about it.
Now, they've been saying ever since the second one that they thought that they've established these characters enough to get away from that format. And I'm hearing everything about this one is that Galifianakis is the lead and that Bradley Cooper and Ed Helms have kind of become really secondary characters supporting him. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's definitely accurate. I mean, Galifianakis, his character is, eccentric, and he's sort of the one they focus on more. Bradley Cooper and Ed Helms. I was a little disappointed in the two of them, especially Ed Helms. I felt like Ed Helms kind of was phoning it in. He didn't really have much to do, whereas he, I think, was a real central focus of the first two.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's the three of them together. And, you know, Justin Bartha kind of gets taken out of the equation again. I feel so bad for this guy. I feel so bad for him. But, he gets taken out of the equation again. But, you know,
and do they make a joke about that at least? Because that's a running joke now of that franchise.
No, they don't really make a joke about it. There's no lines about it. Like, oh, this happened again. He's not here. You know, he's just sort of swept up. And the plot sort of revolves around them getting him back again, like the first one. But I felt like this, if I was going to rank the Hangover movies, I would say the Hangover 1, the Hangover 3, and then the Hangover 2. I felt like the Hangover 2 was piggybacking too much on the Hangover and trying to kind of recreate that movie just in another setting. Sure. The Hangover 3, I do give them credit. They do go with a different way of it. And yeah, I mean, if you like these three guys, they all have great chemistry, specifically Galifianakis and Bradley Cooper. I love the two of them and their relationship throughout the three movies. It didn't wham, bam, and pow me. It wasn't like, wow, but
Well, yeah, when you say it's not a comedy, I think a lot of people are going to be going into it expecting it to be.
Yeah, it's a comedy. I mean, there are funny moments. I mean, the three of them, there's hijinks that ensue as they kind of go off on their little mission to do what they need to do. But, you know, it's a little violent. There are some animals that meet their demise in this film.
Okay.
You know, I'm sure they didn't literally meet their demise on set, but I could, you know,
the giraffe joke. You're talking about the giraffe joke?
The movie opens with a giraffe being...
Well, that's an opening scene?
Yeah, that's an opening... That's how the movie opens.
Okay.
You know, and then there's some more animals throughout the film. So, I mean, it's a little edgy. It's definitely raunchy.
I'd say the second one was pretty edgy. I mean, there was a transvestite joke in the second one that caught me off guard. And, there's some really violent stuff that happens in that second one. Now, OK, I have a question. The second one seemed to turn a lot of people off to the franchise. Do you think that they should come back around and check it out to see how it ends?
I think so. I think I think you want to come back and see. I think they bring some characters back from the first one in some really fun moments. They're back in Vegas. There's a really fun scene in Vegas at Caesar's Palace where it sort of all began for these guys. And, you know, there's a great – and it's funny. There's a post – you know, in this age of post-credit scenes you know, Marvel has been known to do their – everybody talks about their credits – after credit scene. There is a phenomenal post-credit scene in The Hangover 3 that actually makes a nod to what the franchise was all about and also I think is better than the Marvel post-credit scenes. And, you know, so those – I think those who come into this and they're like, well, this isn't really like the first two, stay for the credits because then you'll get a jolt of what – of what you may have thought you were expecting from the film.
All right. I'll say this much. You've convinced me to at least be somewhat interested in it because I wasn't at all. And I just kind of assigned myself to the fact that I'm going to see it on cable or catch up with it later because it doesn't feel to me like the kind of movie that I need to see on the big screen. I'm not compelled to find out what the closure is for these guys and to hear that Bradley Cooper and Ed Helms don't quite get the spotlight, you know, the way that they might have in the first two films turns me off a little bit to it. But from what you're saying, I'm at least intrigued to probably check it out this weekend.
Yeah, and it's funny. I feel like that would be my recommendation to people. Like, you should be at least intrigued to maybe go see it. You know,
it's darker.
Yeah, I mean, The Hangover. I feel like after that first one, it sort of spilled everything out in terms of where things could go with these three guys. Part two just kind of added on top of it. It said, let's try to reshape these jokes to make you laugh at them again. So part three really does go for something different. And that's what I appreciated most about it. And I think that if you're a fan of this franchise, you'll definitely be satisfied by its conclusion.
All right. Now that's a perfect way to segue into Fast Six, because when you talk about a sequel that is catering directly to its fan base, that is exactly what Fast and Furious 6, or just Furious 6, or just 6. Like, I'm not even – they keep shortening the title every time we get to another sequel. But I think that they realize that their fan base is a lot bigger now because of the success of Fast 5.
Yeah, that's my question. My first question to you is Fast 5 was kind of – I think took a lot of people by surprise, and especially Universal, and they're like, oh my God, we may have like a monster franchise on our hands.
Right.
You know, now coming over to part six, do they keep that, you know, and knowing that they're already making part seven, and I think it's even coming out like next summer.
Does
that momentum from Fast 5 carry over to Fast 6, and does Fast 6 do a good job sort of carrying that torch from Fast 5 and kind of building this franchise?
Yes and no is the answer to that question. And I'll explain in this way. They're definitely setting up and establishing and expanding a mythology. I think they realize now that this isn't just another sequel, you know, that happens to involve the same characters. They are tying together a lot of loose ends. And it's funny to even talk about the fact that there were loose ends in a Fast and Furious franchise, but they make a lot of references to all of the previous films. I think almost every Fast sequel is referenced in some way, a plot point or an old character, with a heavy emphasis on what happened in Fast 5, but also setting up, as you say, what's going to happen in Fast 7. And the funny thing is, for people who really do follow this series and follow this narrative, they've always been kind of confused as to where the series takes place, because a few of the characters who are on the team were involved in Tokyo Drift, which is the third one, and some of them died in Tokyo Drift. So then to see them again on screen, you're like, well, this must take place prior to. And yeah, at the end of this movie, in a post-credit sort of sequence, you see, it's weird. It's a spoiler, but not a spoiler, because it happened already and you've seen it, but you see how the character dies, but now they explain it and it sets up what happens in Seven. So it's almost like the timeline is finally caught up and is finally converged. And I've always believed that these films have been like a soap opera where, you know, some characters have amnesia and some who were dead have come back from the dead, with Michelle Rodriguez's character this time and all of these, you know, villains that are coming out. But you know, they have these great, great action sequences that keep people invested. I don't think that this movie is as good as Fast Five. Fast Five to me now is the top of this franchise, and I'll be surprised if they beat it. Just the way everything sort of converged in Fast Five, the story was great, the action was great. This one tries a little bit too hard to be jokey. There's a lot of comic relief and not all of it lands. And when they get to, there are two big action sequences that are referenced in the trailers. One involves the tank that's going after them on a highway. And when that ended, I really thought that was the natural end to this movie. And it isn't. The movie keeps going. And the ending is that sequence with the airplane, where they have to sort of take the airplane down. Dude, the last 10 minutes of this movie are so gonzo insane that my hesitance to recommend it previously, because it was a little bit slow and a little bit draggy, it just got blown out because the ending is so amazing that you have to see it. But, you know, the hour and a half leading up to that ending wasn't as good as Fast Five. So I liked it. And if you like the franchise, you're going to love it. But just, you have to dial your expectations back. It's not quite as good as Fast Five was.
So it seems as though, like, and it's funny, I said this a while back, but it seems like they're trying to create their own sort of Marvel universe for bros.
Oh, totally.
In this movie. And so, I mean, I guess Fast and Furious 6, you know, I feel like Fast Five may have been a movie that if you hadn't seen the previous ones, you can just kind of start watching.
Yes.
And you don't really need to. But, I mean, with Fast and Furious 6, do they now say to you, hey, guys, you know, we're now investing in this as a franchise that kind of connects to all the other movies. So would you recommend people who haven't seen the previous movies to now go back and try to watch them all, because Fast and Furious 6 sort of makes, you know, nods to all of them throughout?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in much the same way that you could go to the Avengers – and you could enjoy it, you know, as a movie, but you wouldn't be as invested in the characters unless you've seen the origin stories for Thor and Captain America and Iron Man and all those guys. You're still going to enjoy it, and you're still going to understand who's the good guy, who's the bad guy, because it's just pure action from start to finish. But yeah, they definitely have acknowledged the fact that we have a deeper mythology going on here, and there's motivations driving these characters, and you're going to be more on board with it if you've seen at the very least, if you've seen like Part 4 and then Fast 5, because those are the two that are most heavily referenced. But you want to know who Michelle Rodriguez is, and you want to know why they're risking their lives to essentially retrieve her from the clutches of this bad guy. You want to understand, you know, the different directions that all these characters are coming from. And then the people who have been with it from day one are really going to love the way that that it spins and sets itself up for Fast 7, because almost everything that happened to this point is driving the narrative to this one. And in fact, I think that they could reach some kind of closure with 7, but they always have the ability to bring new characters into it. And it's very much like this Marvel Phase 2 or Marvel Phase 3, where they've set up other heroes. They could take them in different directions. You can go to other locations. It feels like a little bit of Bond, because it's such a globe-trotting thing. It feels like a little bit of Marvel Cinematic Universe. It is its own thing now, and I'm really impressed that they've been able to pull that off.
Yeah, so am I. I really think it's interesting how this franchise is sort of finding itself at, like, in Part 5 and 6. I don't think we've really ever seen anything like this before, and it's sort of reinventing itself, and I think it's great. I think it's a different sort of franchise that you may not expect, that gives you a little bit of everything. My last question is, you know, when I've spoken to people on the street, you know, and just friends of mine about this movie, everybody, you know, everybody's always asking me, oh, how's this movie before they go see it. Everybody always says the same thing about this Fast and Furious 6, is that they love Dwayne The Rock Johnson. That, yes. that him coming to this franchise in Fast Five is what saved the entire franchise. So I have to ask, is his role in this one a meaty one? Are people who are literally going to see this because they loved him in Fast Five, are they going to get their money's worth?
Absolutely. Yeah. He's as much a member of the team as Paul Walker, as Vin Diesel. They realize what they have in him. They realize the chemistry between Diesel and The Rock is just intense. They have found a guy, an actor, who is bigger than The Rock and Vin Diesel combined, and he's on the bad guy team. And of course, it builds to, I think at one point we were talking about the Die Hard movie, that they teased this Russian guy who was built like, you know, a brick, and we never got to see Willis fight the big Russian guy, and it was felt like a disappointment. This film does not disappoint. It builds to a WWE type fight between Diesel and The Rock and this massive Russian dude, and it just they deliver on everything that you want from adding The Rock to this franchise. Absolutely, even more so than I think what we've seen out of The Rock so far in Pain and Gain and G.I. Joe. This is, for people who love The Rock in huge action films, this is the one that you have to see him in. And I give them a lot of credit, because I talked about that last 15 minutes, and there's so many members of this team, and each of them gets a chance to do something incredibly cool during that long, long action sequence that ends the movie. You don't feel shortchanged by, like, if you like Paul Walker in this movie, and he's just like someone who's relegated to the spotlight. He's not at all. He gets a great prison break scene. He gets to do something cool at the end. That WWE fight that I talked about is amazing at the end. The movie really delivers in its last 15 to 20 minutes. So I definitely recommend it just for that alone.
All right. So if you're not, you know, action oriented and going to see Fast and Furious, if you're not looking for the comedy in Hangover 3, guess what? The first big animated movie of the summer it hits theaters this weekend. I don't even know how many people know that that's happening. You know, summer is finally saying, hey, families, okay, you guys can come in too and enjoy the summer movie going season. The film is epic. You've seen it. I haven't. You know, as a guy who writes our When Can I Watch this movie with our kids column, I think a lot of families are going to see Epic in the lineup this weekend, and they're going to say, ooh, finally, you know, they're starving for this a big animated movie. I imagine they are. I have kids. You have kids. We're all sort of itching for a big animated movie to go see in the summer. Monsters University is coming up in June. This is first Epic. Is it worth seeing?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I would really recommend it, especially if your kids liked Rise of the Guardians, which I don't think found the audience that it deserved back in November, because this also is based on a William Joyce book, and it has some fantasy elements to it. It has a lot of heroic elements to it. It's set in a universe that's exists in a forest, and it's a miniaturized universe set in a forest. It has a conservation, eco-friendly message, but it doesn't beat you over the head over it. And it's a scientist who's trying to prove that these miniature warriors known as the Leafmen exist. And because he's so buried in his research, he's kind of alienated his wife and his daughter. So he's trying to reconnect with his daughter. She wants to believe that her father isn't crazy. And she ends up getting shrunk to the miniature size of the Leafmen and pulled on an adventure with them. So I like the fact that there was a girl as a protagonist. When you meet the Leafmen, they're voiced by Josh Hutcherson and Colin Farrell, and they bring some really great charisma to the male characters. There's a lot of really good comic relief with animals, and there's really good action sequences. The director is Chris Wedge. He did the first Ice Age, but he also did a movie called Robots, which my family are huge fans of. He really knows how to do these fluid, sort of fast-moving action sequences. And so for that reason, I think the 3D works too. The mythology might be a little bit too deep for really young kids, but I kind of see this movie filling the void that the Croods did. Like, Croods came out and it was good and everybody really flocked to it. And Epic is landing at a time right now where it has the field open to itself before Monsters lands. So I think that, like you said, family is going to be looking for something to go see. Whether you have a boy or a girl, I think they're going to be interested in some aspect of this story. And I anticipate it doing really, really well until Monsters comes along.
There you go. There's a recommendation to go see Epic. Sean, quickly before we leave, give me your quick prediction. Who wins Memorial Day weekend?
I think it's Fast 6. I think that there's so much buzz coming off of Fast 5, and I think it appeals to almost every member of the audience. I think some people are turned off by Hangover, and I think Fast 6 will win it. What do you think?
You know, I have to agree with you. A couple of weeks ago, somebody asked me this question. I picked Hangover 3 only because Hangover is proven on Memorial Day weekend. Hangover 2 came out on Memorial Day weekend as well and made a boatload of money, whereas Fast 5 came out in April kind of by itself. Right. Now, the Fast and Furious franchise has some serious competition in the Hangover Part 3, but like you said, I feel like the Fast and Furious is coming off a more buzzed about, you know, previous installment than Hangover, so I think Fast and Furious 6 is going to win it as well. Sean O'Connell, thank you very much. I appreciate it. You know, now we're getting into the nitty gritty. A lot every week we're going to be talking about these major films. You want to listen to us because we're seeing them before they come out. We can tell you and steer you in the right direction. Sean, thank you very much.
Of course, and of course, we're 1 week closer to Man of Steel, Eric, and that's our biggest focus.
Ooh, I'm not going to get people too excited, but let
just
me
just remind you, we're 1 week closer.
And let me just say, without getting too into it, the little birdies that I'm hearing are loving this film ridiculously. So, but we'll get into that. Sean O'Connell, thank you very much. Thanks for listening to us, and enjoy your weekend at the movies, everyone.